welcome to the ABCA's podcast. I'm your host, Ryan Brownlee. New ABCA podcast sponsor Driveline are longtime friends, and I've used many of their products when I was coaching in the youth camps now. If you want to truly optimize your pitcher's workload, Pulse from Driveline Baseball takes simple pitch counts to the next level. Pulse is a wearable sensor that precisely measures every throw your pitchers make on a daily basis. Pulse tracks both throw count and throw intensity. Trusted by MLB organizations like the Cincinnati Reds, elite college programs, and individual athletes at all levels, Pulse is changing the way throwing workload is managed. With the Pulse Team dashboard, you'll be able to make data-driven usage decisions to optimize training and injury prevention for your entire team. Visit drivelinebaseball.com/pulse to revolutionize your pitching staff's development and health today. This episode is sponsored by Netting Pros. Netting professionals are improving programs one facility at a time. Netting Professionals specializes in the design, fabrication, and installation of custom netting for backstops, batting cages, dugouts, BP screens, and ball carts. They also design and install digital graphic wall padding, windscreen, turf, turf protectors, dugout benches, dugout cubbies, and more. Netting Professionals is an official partner of the ABCA and continues to provide quality products and services to many high school, college, and professional fields, facilities, and stadiums throughout the country. Netting Professionals are improving programs one facility at a time. Contact them today at 844-620-2707 or info@nettingpros.com. Visit them online at www.nettingpros.com or check out Netting Pros on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, and LinkedIn for all their latest products and projects. Make sure to let CEO Will Miner know that the ABCA sent you. Now on to the podcast. Next up on the ABCA podcast, 2025 ABCA Soldier Sports, NCAA Division II Assistant Coach of the Year, Angelo State Assistant Sam Moat. Moat joined the ASU coaching staff in 2018 and has helped elevate the Rams to one of the best hitting teams in the country, leading the Lone Star Conference in batting average in four of his seven seasons. During the 2023 National Championship season, Moat helped the Rams with the fifth best batting average in the country at .342, while also ranking third in on-base percentage and runs. The Rams also held the top fielding percentage in Division II at .985. 2022 was the best offensive season the Rams have had, scoring a program record of 677 runs, which led all of Division II. The Rams finished with a .357 batting average, which was the fourth highest in the country, while leading Division II in on-base percentage, doubles, and ranking second in hits with 763. While making their second straight College World Series appearance. While at Angelo State, Moat has coached eight different NCAA Division II All-Americans, including the 2019 NCAA Division II Player of the Year, Josh Elver. Prior to his time at ASU, Moat was a volunteer assistant at Texas A&M Corpus Christi. Before that, he spent 2 years as an assistant coach at the University of Northwestern Ohio. Moat also spent 3 years as an assistant coach at Iowa Western Community College, where he won the 2014 NJCAA National Championship and came in fifth at the NJCAA World Series in 2015. So welcome Sam Moat to the podcast. Here's Sam Moat, ABCA Division II Assistant Coach of the Year, Angelo since 2018, national champs in 2023, also national champ at Iowa Western in 15. But spent time at Corpus Christi and University of Northwestern Ohio. Sam, we go back to the Midwest days many, many moons ago.
No doubt, man. Thanks for having me on. It's I'm honored and humbled to be here, man.
Yeah, and congrats, by the way, because this is really hard for us. We have so many good assistants, and our committees do a really good job of putting names, but it is really hard to choose just because there are so many deserving assistant coaches out there.
No, absolutely. It's like when Brooksy told me, I was shocked, obviously humbled and, you know, excited. So
you've been at just about every level. You know, what has each level taught you along the way?
It's crazy to think about just being at all the different levels, right? and picking up different things. For me, really, it's just being able to, and really just be able to talk to people and learn from people at that are coming from different backgrounds, you know, ability levels. Not saying that one level is better than the other by any means, but just learning from those, you know, just different people in different parts of the country has been the kind of the biggest thing for me that I've learned from all of those levels, whether it's Ohio, you know, out in Iowa or down here in Texas, just kind of seeing the differences in everyone.
Do you feel like you have a better appreciation of baseball overall because you've been at those levels and you've been a lead at all those levels? Do you have an appreciation of how good baseball is at every level?
Yeah, I think, what I've realized is just the biggest difference that I've seen is just the depth of competition. I think everybody's good, right? Every team's got has a dude, or, you know, a big bat in the middle of the lineup or whatever it is. It's just that depth of competition as, you know, you move in, you know, to your conference and you get the separation between the elite teams and the good teams versus kind of the middle teams and all that. I think that's been the biggest thing that I've really taken from bouncing around to, you know, the different levels is just the depth of the competition and the quality of the teams.
How different have the personalities been of the head coaches that you've worked for?
Being at Iowa Western, with Coach Reardon, I think, you know, everybody knows Coach and he's awesome. Very demanding, but very understanding of, hey, this is the way it is. This is what we're going to do. This is the expectation. And hey, either get on board or get out, basically. Which I think is why he's really successful. Then going back to Ohio, to UNOH, that was actually a weird deal. Like, I actually played for Coach Hartman. We kind of knew each other. So that was just a different dynamic. again, an unbelievable coach as well. And then here with Coach Brooks, who's been winning at a high level for forever. I think a lot of their personalities are really similar, but just different way in different ways, right? Just different ways of doing things. But I think at the bottom line, you know, success is success. Just how we get there could be different.
Was it Coach Hartman that suggested you should get into coaching?
I don't know. Maybe. I think so. Playing for him in the summer. Playing in the Great Lakes League, I was an okay player. By no means would I ever think that I was going to play at the next level. So, you know, kind of coaching for me was going to happen, right? My dad was a coach. I've been around the game since I was 2 years old. So it just made sense. And then getting around, you know, Coach Hartman and getting to know him and like, hey, man, this kind of does make sense. Hey, you should probably do this. It's worked out well.
You have any tips for interviewing? We get a lot of questions. I get a lot of questions from coaches about moving up and moving to different levels. You've been at a bunch of different levels and done a good job moving your way up. You have any tips for interviewing?
Just be you. That's the biggest thing for me. Like, I am who I am. Obviously beliefs and philosophies change. But at the end of the day, I'm me. It's and be you, and just don't try to be something you're not, because, you know, people in this game, everybody, like, and just people in general, will see right through that, right? Like, if you're trying to be somebody that's who everybody wants you to be, it's not going to work. So just, again, go in and be you, be unapologetically you, and I think you'll get more respect out of going about things that way than trying to fake it.
What are some of your philosophies or beliefs that have changed over the years?
Oh, man. It's a lot. I think the game has changed a lot. I think the bats have made offensive philosophies change quite a bit. Rather than just sit in the box and hope for a three-run homer. Those are harder and harder to come by now, especially it's the bats. The pitching's way better now, more dynamic, I would say. You know, I think the biggest thing for me is, I don't know if it's changed, but like just chaos. Just being able to create chaos offensively, and almost like, you know, you think back to the old UNLV basketball days, and it's the 40 minutes of hell. Like, it needs to be nine innings of that, because it's really, really hard to defend and to prepare for a team that you don't know what you're going to get. So I think just being able to do multiple things, and multiple things well. You know, I love golf. So having, you know, going to play golf and having a full bag of clubs makes the game a lot easier than just one or two, right? So I think just being able to be really dynamic and adjustable is the big thing that I've kind of felt myself kind of transition into.
Do you feel like, though, because offense was so predicated on home runs, that teams got away from working on defending chaos in practice? And how can a coach, because I think that's the way we're heading now, how can a coach combat that with their practice plan as far as planning for chaos? I think adding that offensively allows that in your practice plan. Because right. I was always part of those action-oriented teams. Every place I coached at was action-oriented, and we did try to put a lot of pressure in a lot of different ways. So I think part of that is if your offense is set up that way, it does make it a little bit easier to practice it.
Yeah, and you know, for us here at Angelo, like that's – it's no secret. Like, you know, we're going to bunt. We're going to run. So our guys are facing that, every, like you said, every single day. So they're kind of preparing – to handle that. And I think where, you know, it separates what we do from, I guess, what a lot of, I wouldn't say a majority, but what a lot of people do is, you know, we're that's part of our offense. Like that's our identity. And I think you just have to take that leap and like, hey, this is who we are. This is what we're going to do. And like I said, our guys are facing it every single day. So I think I think obviously in practice it goes hand in hand, right? Like you said, if your offense does it, I think your defense kind of elevates itself to be able to handle that sort of thing.
I feel like Coach Reardon's biggest impact on the game is the point game and dead ball, live ball. Because I saw it. I was at Butler last weekend. They're doing point games. So shout out to Coach Reardon. Are you guys using those at Angelo?
Point game. Yeah, point game all the time. I remember the first time we did it here, our guys were like, what is going on? And I'm like, hey, man, just run. Just run. Like, you'll figure it out. Because, like, you can explain point game, but you can't explain point game until you just do it. Yep. So trying to explain it was like, all right, you know what? I'm just here. This is what we're going to do. Just go. And, like, our guys were exhausted and just crushed. And now they love it, and it's a staple for what we do, and just, again, creating chaos and, you know, run hard, turn left.
So. Yeah, for coaches that have never used point game, explain it, because I think there is the offensive component to it, but there is the defensive component too. Like, there's just 100%. Such a benefit on the defensive side of using it.
Yeah, I think so. Basically, what point game is you get. The beauty of it is you can make up any situation you want, right? Whatever you want to work on that day, whether you know, runner at first, first and second, first and third, bases loaded, whatever you want to do. And basically it's one swing and the offense gets a point for every base that they touch. So they're getting, you know, trail runners coming hard out of the box, taking extra 90s, going first and third on a one hopper to the left fielder. Like, you're not going to really do that in a game, but you'll see in the point game, if you turn hard, that guy might bobble it. And then we get a free 90, and then the backside runner's going to second base. Now we're second and third, nobody out, and we get a huge inning. But anyway, they get a point for every base they touch. And then the defense, the big component on the defensive side is obviously you're getting your defensive coverages, your double cuts, your just everything that can come up in a game. And then the big thing for us and everybody in point game is the defense gets minus 5 points for a double play. And as we know, as baseball guys, double plays are just absolutely demoralizing, you know, for an offense. So being able to turn double plays is huge. And everything, all those situations are always done with one out. So the defense has that opportunity to score some points. You know, I just think for the defensive side, just handling pressure, being able to handle the ball, knowing a guy's going to first and third, second to home, whether they're going to be out by 40 feet or not, you still have to make a throw, make a catch, make a tag. And a lot of that going on is where guys, you know, screw up and get, especially when they get tired. Well, you know, you're in May and it's a Sunday, you're going to be tired. So being able to perform when you're tired is huge.
I think the other benefit defensively is you have to stay with the next play too. Like, you may not get the lead runner, but you can't put your head down and not pay attention to the backside runner too. I think it forces the defense to stay in there and realize that, yeah, it's not just about the lead runner sometimes. It's making sure we take care of the backside guy too.
No doubt. Then we see it all the time. A guy tries to throw a dude out at the plate. Oh, I got a shot at this guy. Oh, he's safe. And then the guy goes to second base. And then the next guy hits a routine ground ball to short. You're like, well, that's a double play. We're out of the inning. And then you look up at the end of the inning and we gave up 6 runs. And we're like, just throw the ball. Just be conscious of where everybody's at. I think is, especially today, right? You know, I think the game awareness has gone away. It's something that I think everybody is fighting a little bit, is trying to get back to understanding how to play the game of baseball. So I think, again, point game just allows you to, in real time, kind of teach and relearn that.
And foul balls and swings and misses, you lose, you're out.
Yeah, go pick it up, man. It's BP. don't foul it off.
That's the other part of it. BP guys trying to hit your bat, don't foul the ball off.
Yeah, go get it, next guy out. Yeah.
Where are you starting with your individual hitters? I know your guys' roster is pretty diverse on bringing guys in from different areas. Where are you starting with your hitters?
So in the fall, we started fall really early this year. We jumped right into team.
Is so that actually, new?
Yes, it was, by design. Just we knew we had a completely new group, so we knew we were going to have to do a lot of work on the back end, right? So we jumped right in. Actually, tonight is the last game of our Fall World Series, so we'll be jumping into individuals next week, which is, I mean, the weather's still great, so we could have pushed it back, but knowing what we had to do, so when guys get here, we really don't mess with them much. Kind of just let them play. Guys have had some success, and hey, it just doesn't make sense to change stuff right away, right? So let's see if they can see if it translates, and if it does, then we leave them alone. And then when we jump into the, you know, if for some reason it doesn't work out and we jump into some individual times, man, for me, where I start is starting on time. I think that is huge. I think understanding when to start your swing or your move. I think that is a struggle, you know, watching a lot of the postseason baseball now, guys are starting so early and it's awesome to see. And I think that's the biggest fight for me right now with our guys is, hey man, start early. Well, coach, I am. No, you're not. Start earlier. So I think that's exactly where I'll start with our guys, is just starting on time. And then I think starting on time and then swinging at the right pitch. Those are the two places.
Those go hand in hand.
Absolutely.
Timing and pitch selection go hand in hand.
No doubt. And I think those two things alone, I think, can kind of change a hitter, really. It can take you from a 300 hitter to a 340, 350 hitter if, you know, we're swinging at the right pitches, we're on time to those pitches, and then obviously, you know, bat path and all that stuff, which we can do 17 more hours on that and have 47 other people disagree and agree. And but I just think if you simplify it down to swinging at the right pitches and being on time, and direction. I think those are the three things that kind of are non-negotiables, I guess. So,
what are you showing them in video then, as far as timing and when they move? I know everything's predicated on their style, and you know, for me it was their style, and so we tried to show different styles from the pitcher's view, as far as, okay, this guy's pretty basic. This is when he starts. If he's a toe tap guy, this is when he starts. If he's a big old leg kick guy, this is when they start. Is that kind of what you're trying to relay with your hitters on that, with the pitcher?
Kind of. So, you know, obviously we have all the video, the systems and everything. But for us, it's more individualized. Like, hey, like, we want you to start early. Well, what is early to you? Okay, so this feels early to me. Okay, are you on time? Oh, yes, I am. Okay, then you're starting fine. Well, I'm still feeling a little late. Okay, then start earlier. Like, it's really, I don't like complicating things, because it just dumb it down and hey, how can I get from A to B as fast as possible and as efficient as possible, yeah. Right? So, you know, the video stuff, like, we'll show them some video, but again, it's more of a hey, when you tell me when you're starting, kind of thing. Because I think if I can show them, if I show them on a video of, hey, this is when you should start, well, and I ask them, tell me when you start, they're not aligning, right? So being able to communicate to me, I think, is more beneficial than me telling them, hey, this is when you need to go.
Yep. Love it. We would use stopwatch for guys too, their load to contact time.
Yep, absolutely.
Just to verbalize it for them to be able to hear it. Because again, they just don't know. Like, until they start feeling it, it's hard for them to make adjustments. Coach Brooks said you were one of the best infield guys he's been around.
Whew. Well, that's awesome. I was an infielder, man. That's so it just came natural, I guess. And that's really, you know, kind of takes, you know, hits me a little bit. Like, man, that's awesome to hear. So,
how do you get them to get to their prep steps consistently? Because that's kind of the timing part of hitting, right? I think that's the simplest part of playing defense, is being able to do that consistently. Just like being on time as a hitter, I think, right, being on time as an infielder is as simple as you can get it, is that part of it. And if you can get them to do it every time, it makes it a little bit easier.
Yeah.
Not always easier, but a little bit easier.
It's funny. I was watching our game the other night, our Fall World Series game, and I was watching our shortstop, who played a ton of third base in high school. So he was a guy that would just kind of start wide and kind of rock and then hop. And I'm like, okay, but that's not going to work in the middle. At least for me. Right. I'm like, okay. So it's funny you ask that, because I've, like, the last 3 days, that's what I've been thinking about, is how can I get those guys to do it more consistently? And I think, again, you know, going back to Coach Reardon, he talks about boredom and frustration in baseball. And I think the boredom part is getting guys to do that consistently. And, you know, it's a constant battle with those guys of, hey, every pitch, for 200 pitches a night, you are doing this. And you might have to move on 5 of them, 10, 15, I don't know. But the one time you take off is when, you know, that ball in the hole that you just don't get to, and now we lose by a run because you didn't do what you're supposed to do. So, man, we mess with timing all the time, you know, as basic as throwing a ball up in the air, catching it to simulate stuff. In BP, I'll sit back and watch them and make them take 2 or 3 steps either direction where the ball is hit. And just again, just constant talking about it. And hey, this is what we do. This is what I believe is going to help you have success. And just constantly dripping water on that rock, right, until it breaks. So that it's the biggest battle, which it's the simplest thing to do in the world, right?
It's pitch to pitch, like that's it. Is. And like that, if you want to get out of funks, do it every pitch. Like if you want to get out of defensive funks, do it every pitch. I like swinging and missing on the fungo every once in a while, just to see if guy to be able to check to see if they're doing it. It's just it's really hard, but it is the simplest thing that they can do to get ready every time. But it's really hard to do.
It is, and the issue for me was like the fungo. That's a really good idea, and swinging and missing on the fungo. But I don't hit a ton of fungo. Yeah. I don't. I use pitchers, and I set up tees and have pitchers hit off tees to our guys. You get more realistic ground balls, more realistic spin, right? So now there's a time and a place when, hey, we really need to work on something here, so I'm going to go some fungos. But a lot of the time, it's pitchers hitting off a tee, just creating different hops and different pace and all that stuff.
What are the differences for you with the middle guys and the corner guys? Because I've always viewed them almost as there's two different positions. Like
there are. I think obviously every coach in the world would love to have four shortstops in the infield.
It's not the easiest thing for a middle guy to go to the corners, though.
It's not. It's really isn't.
Really hard.
The angles are different.
For a middle guy to go to the corner.
It is. I struggled with it when I was
too.
An average player. I think getting the corner guys to understand that it's okay to not get in front of the ball and take a drop step.
I think being in front of the ball for them is a bad thing because they're catching the ball in the middle of their body where they're not supposed to catch it. They get handcuffed on a lot of balls.
Yes, it hinders guys quite often. And then for me, the biggest thing that I'm spent with this team is just the depth of where to play. And being okay, I'm okay to play, 10 steps behind the back. Like, it's okay. Like, the ball's going to get on me pretty quick. And then just understanding just the nuances of the angles at third base, right? Of they're a lot sharper. When do I go get this ball? When do I retreat to create a long hop? And then for whatever reason, middle guys that go to third base or any third baseman, they're so afraid of their backhand. And I'm like, man, you've been to shortstop your entire life. I move you 30 feet to your right, and now all of a sudden your backhand's gone? I don't get that.
It's the speed. I always felt like it was the speed and, again, trying to keep it simple. It really is. It's either going to be a backhand or a forehand at third.
Like, right.
That's really what it's going to be. Their footwork is just basically flip-flop between a backhand and a forehand.
100%. And I tell guys, hey, man, if you just backhand the ball, it's so much easier. You don't have to work as hard.
Throw, too.
Yeah. And so I think infield is I'm so passionate about it. I love being around the infielders. I love listening to people talk about infield play and just all the nuances now of timing, of tags, of everything. Like it's just so fascinating to me that something as simple as catching a ground ball, we can dive so far into, right? So it's awesome.
How many guys do you have to go to move to first that haven't played first base before?
Quite a few. Here on our national championship team here, our first baseman was a third baseman his entire life. And then it just with some arm issues, he just, hey, we're better if you go over there. And the guy didn't make an error. And I think the value of a really good first, if you have a really good first baseman, your team defense gets elevated so high. It's such an undervalued.
You think 30 points on fielding percentage?
Oh, easily.
I think it takes a 945 team to a 975 if you have a good first baseman.
Yeah, I mean that team actually. So that team, the 23 team, we fielded 985 with a guy at first base that didn't make an error, and it's such a security blanket to have over there. Just as long as you don't throw it over his head, we got a shot. And that's the big thing that I talk to our guys about all the time, infield wise, is, hey, just don't miss high. Don't miss high, don't miss arm side, and we have a shot. So moving guys to first, I think, you know, I love having, you know, non-traditional first baseman, right? Just because of just the being able to have the footwork of a middle guy, being able to have the hands of a middle guy, right? Now, guys that play first all their life obviously know the nuances of the footwork around the bag and all that stuff, which is awesome too. But it's just the ability, like I said, to have four shortstops on the infield. It's kind of the dream, right?
How are you teaching footwork then for them as far as picking balls, receiving? How are you teaching footwork at first base?
So we'll start. Actually, I was doing it a couple weeks ago with our guy because he's transitioning to first base. The first thing I do is ask, how are you more comfortable picking the ball, backhand or forehand? And he says backhand. I'm like, okay, then we are striding to make every pick a backhand. And because that's what you're comfortable with. Now, we're not going to neglect forehands, right? Because they're going to happen. But we're going to try to make every pick a backhand. And then to me, like, it's just getting to the bag. I still like the old traditional get to the bag, get your heels on it, and kind of square up to wherever the play is. I just think it gives you the freedom to move. And we do kind of lean more towards the right field side of the bag because we don't want guys missing arm side. But then the timing is really, I want to stretch as late as possible. And I want my left foot to hit the ground because our first baseman's right-handed. Basically my foot to hit the ground as soon as I make contact with the ball.
That's the simplest way to put it too. And that's where you always see the first baseman mess that up is because their feet get preset.
Yep.
And they lose their athleticism. And they get flat-footed. Yeah. I think that's the best way, simplest way to put it is that your glove side foot is contacting the ground at the same time as the catch. And yep, that might be picking, that might be a regular receive because now you're staying athletic.
Absolutely. It's the same thing as a pre-pitch for the infielders. Yep. That timing is no different. So it's, again, baseball, it's crazy. You can, you know, balance timing and direction, right? In baseball, it's all those three things. You got to be on time with your feet. Got to have some athleticism with your balance and everything. So, yeah, I try to keep it simple.
You as a coach, you probably know that may happen when they get on campus. Do you relay that at all to guys before they get there or just kind of let it play out in the fall? Because I'm sure you've recruited guys who are like, he's probably going to go to third or first at some point. Do you relay that at all or you're just letting it play out when they get there?
Just kind of let it play out. Baseball has a funny way of policing itself and how things work themselves out. There's guys that we recruit that, you know, whether it's an outfielder that we recruit that we're like, okay, like he's probably going to end up going to the mound just because he's got some arm strength or whatever. No, we'll let them, you know, get here in the fall and go through, you know, hey, I'm a shortstop. Okay, then go play shortstop. Okay. And after, you know, 2 hours, you're like, hey, man, you're probably not a shortstop. Let's try over here. We'll let guys, you know, the beauty of here is we'll let guys fail. And they have a shot to come back, right? So it's – And I don't say those guys are failing because we have a bigger plan.
It's a shift. It's what's best for the team. Like, it's not a 100%. Fail. It's, okay, this is what's best for our team.
Yeah. So it's not, I mean, the majority of the time it's not communicated because it'll be communicated when it happens. And we'll be like, hey, this is what we're thinking. This is why we're thinking it because you got to give them a why, right? So, especially now.
Well, I mean, you said it. I mean, what are tips for communicating with this generation of players?
Be honest. I still really believe that the honesty part, especially now, because I think they can see right through the BS. I think there's so much of that out there that if you're just black and white with them, I think that in general, just black and white, stay out of the gray areas, because that kind of leads everything up to interpretation, is the best way to go about it. And it, again, just, hey, facts, this is how it is, and this is where we're going.
What have you added drill-wise, infield or hitting? Have you added many new things? It just seems like there's always new stuff coming out, and I always like asking good coaches that, because you kind of vet. You guys vet what's good, what's not good. Yeah, just through trial and error, you guys have kind of vetted out a lot of that stuff through trial and error.
Hitting-wise, I mean, again, I think hitting can get so complex and so complicated that try to keep it simple. Like, we still have, like, I think for me, if you had a, you know, hey, you can only have a couple things, like I'm doing angle BP and I'm doing short bat stuff. I think those two things clean up so much. Infield wise, I made up a drill we call Chaos. And it's just a ton of ground balls, a ton of double plays. The pitchers are involved. They're running around like crazy. And that's kind of been one of our staples here for the last, you know, 5 or 6 years, is, you know, the Thursday before a game, it's chaos day, and all the pitchers, you know, they're doing PFP double plays, covering first, tweener bunts. There's, if you don't know what you're doing, pitcher's going to get hit with a ground ball, and it's hilarious to watch, because they run out and everybody off the field screaming, get back. And it's because myself and our pitching coach, Coach Foster, we aren't slowing down when we're hitting the fungos, because we know what we're doing. And it's, hey, man, head on a swivel and figure it out.
With starting fall ball earlier, were you managing their bullets, their workload at all? Because you're getting right into it. How are you managing the position players' workload with their throws?
Just a ton of communication, right? And we've had guys in the past where they're like, hey, I'm like, well, first of all, we'll meet. Like, we have position meetings before we start. So I'll meet with all the infielders, kind of go through our expectations, kind of our blueprint as an infield, right? And then the biggest thing for me is like, hey, man, like, if your arm feels good today, we're going to throw. And if you're hanging and need a day, take a day. Like, it's September. I don't care. But just that constant communication, and then just being aware of what we're doing in, you know, the little short practices before an inter squad or whatever. Just being you know, aware of, okay, hey, today we're doing this, tomorrow we're doing this. Okay, so NDD today, let's just do a no throw day and kind of give them a day. It's more feel than really, you know, kind of the traditional tracking of numbers of throws and all that. It's more of a feel thing, and trust in those guys is, hey, coach, I'm hanging a little bit. I'm only going to go to 90. Beautiful.
Who do you feel like over the years, coaching wise, had the best hitting routines for you? Could be pregame, could be in game routines.
As in players I've coached?
Yeah. Guys you've coached.
Man. Trying to think, there's a lot of guys that come to mind that we've had here. Aaron Walters was one of our best hitters here. Was an A&M transfer. Just knew the type of hitter he was. Knew what worked for him. And I think, again, there a lot of guys are different.
What worked for him? When you say he knew what worked for him, what worked for him?
Simple. Just simple. It really was. It was, hey, coach, can you come toss me a few? I'm gonna hit some high tee, and can you come toss me a few? And I'm gonna hit a couple backside doubles, and then I'm gonna be good. All right, Aaron, good. And then there's was him. Like, it was just. Then there's other guys that we've had. So we're lucky. We have two pro batters in our indoor facility, which are game changers. And we have guys that live off of them, and I think that it helps them. I think it humbles them at first, because the stuff that those machines throw is ungodly. Everything's high spin, everything's gross. but guys get better, right? So, you know, we had a Josh Alvear, who was, I think, the 2019 National Player of the Year. I don't think I've ever saw Josh make contact off that machine. But it just understanding, you know, and for us, we used it a ton for pitch selection, strike zone awareness, you know, because we haven't paired with the hit track, so we know the strike zone. But yeah, I think just the routine wise, I think it's so individualized, just like everything else in this game. You know, I think, but Aaron sticks out to me, as just the simplest, like, hey, take 10 swings off a tee. All right. Couple backside doubles. All right. I'll see you at first pitch, Aaron.
Something to be said for that. Hey, square the ball up and like get on to the next thing. Cause I think sometimes guys overdo it or they swing into bad habits sometimes.
100%. And I think it's a fine line, right? You know, I still believe that those who hit the most, but I think there is a fine line of you get, you know, diminished return. Right. But it's like anything. If you want to be good at it, if you want to be elite at it, you have to do it. You have to constant repetition and be okay being boring. Because I think greatness is boring.
Friends of mine were with the Guardians, and they said Jose Ramirez. They said his routine is pretty much the same every day. He doesn't get there real early, but it's the same thing every day. I think he's one of the best hitters we have in the game. Says the same thing every day. And they said it's not earth-shattering stuff, but it's the same every day that he shows up. It's about 40 minutes before game time, does the same thing, and then goes out and rakes in the game.
Yeah, I think we can get we make hitting so complicated. Yeah. Now, I think it's difficult. I don't want people to
miss. That's the beauty of it, though. The beauty of it is it is so hard. Like, that's the beauty of hitting.
But if you simplify it down, it does become easier. Yeah. I will say, you know, hey, I'm looking here. Oh, it's not there. I'm not swinging. Now, way easier said than done, right? When a guy's throwing, you know, 94 with ride and
the game winning runs at second base or third base.
100%.
There's a lot of factors.
There is. So, and I think that comes down to our training environments and the way we work and putting as much pressure on them in those situations. So when we do get in the game, oh, I've been here before. And that's something we do a lot of too. And we're lucky. We're lucky that we don't play any non-conference games. Which is so January 30th when our season starts or whatever the day is, that game matters. Yeah. So when we get to postseason, everybody's like, oh, it's postseason. Oh, dude, you've been doing this since January. Yeah. Calm down. It's just baseball. We'll be fine. And I think that that helps us. So when we get to, you know, you get to carry and it's, you know, the national championship game. Well, hey man, it's just baseball. It's the same thing you played in January. So that I think that part, being able to put pressure on as guys as early as possible and as much as possible in practice is going to make the game so much easier.
Been on two national championship teams. What do those programs do differently as far as developing players, but also focusing on winning too?
At neither place was winning really discussed. And that's the biggest similarity I can draw from both of them. Now, we went about things in different ways, but it was more tailored to the process of, hey, we're going to do this, then we're going to do this, and then we're going to look up in June, and everybody's going to dogpile and get a big old ring. But I think that's the biggest thing is we mention winning, like, hey, this is what you have to do to win. It's not like, hey, we have to go win this game, but these are the steps to take to win games. You know, winning's hard. Winning's really hard. So why talk about it? Just focus more on the process of doing the things that need to be done to put yourself in the best position to win.
How much info scouting report-wise are you relaying?
So I do all of our hitting scouting reports. So I'm researching all of our opponents' pitchers. I just started opening them up to them where I'll like early in the week, once like I'll start giving them video so they can start watching stuff with very select numbers of percentages and things like that. But basically is I'll just spend the week kind of doing my mad scientist deal and then get into the games. And, you know, we have the binders of stuff, of information. But a lot of it is, hey, this is what he does. This is his strengths. This is what we're looking for. Here we go. Again, trying to give them as much knowledge without paralyzing them so they can still go out and perform and just let it go.
With what's going on with D1, is your guys' roster management switched much? Has it changed much for you guys with everything that's going on, the craziness of Division I?
If you ask Coach Brooks, he would like us to get a little smaller. But again, it comes down to, if we think a guy is going to help us win,
it would be really hard to turn a good player down.
It's hard.
If you have good player out there that you feel like is going to help you win, it would be really hard. If you don't have a roster cap, like it would be
We do not. So
it would be really hard to turn a player down that you felt like was going to help you win.
And I think again, just like everything else, there's a point. There's too many, right? Where if you don't, you know, whether it's you don't have enough staff to be able to manage and be able to work with those guys, I think then it does hurt you. So I think, you know, I don't know what that right number is. I don't know if it's, I have no idea. That's not for me to figure out, right? I just, when they give me the rules, okay, here we go. But no, I think, you know, ideally, I think to start a fall, 40, 42 maybe, and then just kind of go from there. But again, I think there's people in a room somewhere trying to figure that out right now.
And you've been through it. You've been to different parts of the country recruiting. Give somebody a tip that, because I had to do the same thing. Give somebody a tip that's going to a geographical area that they've never really coached or probably recruited a whole lot. What are some of the tips on going to those new areas and managing the recruiting of heading to a different geographical area to recruit?
So I was, when I came, so when I went to Iowa, I was lucky. You know, I joined a staff with Coach Reardon, Rob Allison, who's crushing it with PBR out there. So I learned so much from those guys of just getting to know the people that were entrenched in those areas, right? And then, you know, going back to Ohio, I kind of knew people, just that's where I'm from, grew up. So new people there. And then when I came to Texas, you know, went to Corpus, again, joined a staff with, you know, Marty Smith, Nick Magnifico, who was an absolute rock star on the recruiting trail. Just those guys taught me so much of just being able to latch on to people that are entrenched in those areas and those geographical areas and learn from those and not necessarily like, you know, steal from them or whatever, but hey, where's that guy going? Okay. That guy's always there. Those guys are really good. Maybe I should go there. And just being able to communicate to people that you've never spoken to and being okay to reach out on a random Tuesday, hey, this is, you know, Coach Mo from Angelo State. I just got here. What do you got? And just not being afraid to do that, and not being afraid to just put yourself out there.
Good recruiters are wired different.
They are.
And I give it a compliment. Good recruiters are insane, in the best possible way. They are insane the best possible way.
Yeah. Agreed. It's so hard now because it used to be like you could find a diamond in the rough, right? And now you can't. Everybody knows everybody. You know, with Twitter and all of this stuff, there's no hidden gems out there. And I think that's what makes that's what makes us, I think, different is, you know, I think development at our level and at Angelo State is unbelievable because we're not getting those first rounders or those high profile prospects, right? So we have to do our jobs and turn them into those types of players. And we have, and we're lucky here, we have all the resources that we, you know, the tools, and I take back resources because everybody could use more, right? But we have everything that we possibly could want at this moment to get guys to be the best versions of them.
With starting team practice earlier, did you guys adjust your lifting schedule at all from years past?
A little bit. We did a couple things different. So we're not an early morning team. We don't lift early. So we kind of, when we're doing team stuff, we kind of tailor it around their class schedule. We have certain pods with our strength coach. They come in, sign up. Hey, you might have 8 guys in your group. Go lift with them. And then one day a week, they will lift as a, together as a team. Then once we get into the individual stuff, we'll go into team lifts. But not much has changed. But you know, as far as the schedule goes, we're still getting in there, getting after it, and we're lucky we have unbelievable strength coach who just crushes our dudes. So it's good.
What'd your dad relay to you before you got into coaching, if anything?
Oh man, a lot. I've probably forgotten a lot of the stuff that he's told me.
It's in there somewhere.
It is. And we talk all the time. So, man, the big thing is just believing and trusting yourself. That was kind of the things that I still, and I'm still struggle with that, right? Of okay, hey, this is what I believe. Okay, just trust yourself, man. Like, just get out of your way, let yourself go. Understand that you're pretty decent at this thing, and go do it. And hey, you've been doing this long enough now. You know what you're doing. You're good at it. Trust yourself and go.
That internal dialogue can be really positive or negative. It really, yeah. It just depends. That internal dialogue is a lot. It'd be interesting to be able to mic up people's internal dialogue to hear the internal dialogue for people. I think about that a lot. Like, it would be fascinating because I do view it as separate things. Like, who you are and then that voice inside your ears is two completely different entities. I get out there on some of that, but I do feel like I think you have to, like, who you are and then that voice that's in your head, those are two different things.
No, and thoughts become things too.
They do.
So you got to be able to, you know, talk to yourself the right way.
Yes.
And I think if I mic'd up my inner voice, I'd need a bleep button.
I would too.
like that thing, I would just stand on it.
My coaching one, because I've been out of it for so long, that one's gone away. Mine's in the weight room. I still have that MF-er. Yeah. In between my ears working out.
No doubt.
Have you gotten a lot of inexpensive experience? You've been around really good coaches. Just what to do, but also maybe what not to do. I think you learn a lot on both sides of that. Have you gotten any of that over the years?
Yeah. I think I've been extremely blessed to be around, like you said, some of just unbelievable coaches and unbelievable people. I think that's more important than the coaching side. It's just the people. The coaching side, you know, baseball is baseball, right? It's 60 feet, 90 feet. We get it. But being around such good humans and watching them as fathers, and you know, me having a 3-year-old daughter now, I see myself like mimicking some of the stuff I've heard, and yeah, I think the knowing what to do, what not to do. Hey, let's try this. Okay, that didn't work. I really didn't like that. Okay, I'm not going to use that, you know, next year or next week. Yeah, I think just the people have been, like you said, just rock star people I've been around, you know, from Coach Reardon to Coach Brooks here. I'm not going to name everybody because I'll forget somebody. But, yeah, I think just, I think that is, as a guy, you, if you move around, I think is invaluable. Is yes, take stuff that you love, but hey, you gotta look at stuff that you don't really like too, because everybody in coaching borrows from everybody else. But if you try to do everything, then you're getting nothing accomplished. Yeah, so you gotta think about what's working. Yeah, absolutely.
Do you have any tips for coaches that are having newborns? Oh. I think it's the most difficult time in your coaching journey is when you start to have children.
So I'm lucky. My wife is a rock star, which everybody says that, but she is. She was a college athlete, so she gets it. She actually coached college volleyball, so she gets the coaching life. And then we're lucky here, too, that we have so much support of people in the community that that have kind of taken us in and loved us as in our family. So, man, just don't be afraid to, hey, like, I can't do that. Like, don't be afraid to say no. I think at the end of the day, like, yes, being a coach is your job, but that's going to end. You're going to be a parent forever. So that's the important side. And that's what's, and people have told me that, and I'm like, okay. But now that I'm in it, like, I can have the worst day here and I can come home and we could get blown out or whatever. And I can go home and my kid doesn't care. She's still going to run up to me. Let's play hide and go seek daddy. And like, and that's the best. That makes it unbelievable and makes it so worth it.
And it is, because it does change your perspective with the players too.
You definitely start to see them in a different light, and more of, not that they're not people right before, but it definitely opens your eyes a little bit.
Yeah, and I think it gives you appreciation of the parents that are in your program too. Like, I 100%. Think that's the other benefit of that too, is you do appreciate the parents in your program a little bit more and what they've had to go through to get their kid to that point.
Yeah. And we've been lucky here. Like, our families of the guys in the program now and in the past are just really good people. And it helps. It makes the culture easy.
Yeah. Do you have a fail forward moment? You have something you thought was going to set you back? Could be personal or professional. We all have a lot of them, so
yeah,
you got one that sticks out.
So I thought, I've listened to a bunch of the podcasts, so I've thought about this. The one thing that I kept coming back to was being at Iowa Western, being, you know, in the fall, you know, you're going on the road to play 18 innings on a random Saturday, and you know, it being in charge of food, right? Got to feed your guys, so. I call this pizza place, hey, you know, whatever, order X number of pizzas, what can you do price-wise? Okay, hey, let me talk to my boss, I'll get back to you. Called a different place, they gave me a better deal, boom, went with that group. Didn't call the other place back, so we're finishing up at a game. We were actually, I'll never forget it, we were at the University of Nebraska playing, and I had two pizza places show up, each with like 45 pizzas. So I have 90 pizzas on my hand trying to figure out what in the hell I'm going to do. And I go up to Coach Reardon. I'm like, hey, man. And he just stared at me like, I'm figured out. Like, just the look that we've all gotten at some point in our careers. Like, I'm figure it out. So luckily, the team we were playing, I ended up selling them half the pizzas. They had cash on their, oh, beautiful. I don't have to worry about food now. So, hey, did a little deal on the side, got the pizzas taken care of, and we were all good. But from that moment on, I've learned just over-communicate and under-assume. I think I'll never forget that. The look, that just that sinking feeling in my stomach, like, oh my gosh, I'm going to have to walk back to Council Bluffs. it was a learning moment for sure.
How do you stay on top of your calendar that way? Do you use checklists? What do you, how are you managing your time I mean, it's a lot. Coach, people that have never coached at your guys' level, they don't understand how many different hoops you guys jump through. How are you handling your day-to-day to make sure everything gets done or you don't miss anything?
I'm actually, that's something I struggle with in being able to create those lists and those checklists. And, Google Calendar is fantastic, being able to do that. I actually still have, the paper calendar that I write stuff on. I think as many times as I can put something on paper and write it down somewhere, I'll try to remember it. I'll text myself quite a bit, which is a weird thing to do, but I do it all the time just for reminders.
It's not weird if it works.
Right. And it's worked. I give a huge shout out to my wife. She's helped me so much on getting organized and, hey, just write it down, man. Just write it down. So that's the best thing for me.
What are some final thoughts before I let you go?
Man, baseball's a great game. I think it's given a lot of people so much. And I think we as a baseball community need to continue to do everything we can to protect it and protect each other in it. And, that's why I think this organization is so great, is because it's just baseball people looking out for baseball people. And that's what makes it awesome.
I get reminders every year heading out on the Barnstormers because we have first-time coaches, and I've had some reach out already, and they're going through the same things we all went through when they're first getting into it and just trying to be like, hey, man, we've all been through this. Like, it's okay to feel like you don't know what you're doing. Like, we all went through it. But that's why we're all here for, is to hopefully make that transition a little bit smoother for you.
100%. If there's not something in this game that somebody hasn't gone through. So we'll get through it together.
Sam, thanks for your time, man. I appreciate you. I'm happy for you. I'll see you in Columbus, and it's always good reconnecting. Appreciate you, sir.
Awesome. Thank you.
Coach Motz, another example of finding great head coaches to work for as an assistant. Definitely helps your career path as an assistant coach if you work for successful head coaches. Congrats to Sam and the entire Angelo State program on this honor. Thanks again to John Litchfield, Zach Hale, Matt West, and the ABCA office for all the help on the podcast. Feel free to reach out to me via email, rbrownlee@abca.org, Twitter, Instagram, or TikTok at @coachb_ABCA, or direct message me via the My ABCA app. This is Ryan Brownlee signing off for the American Baseball Coaches Association. Thanks for leaving better for those behind you.
Wait for another.